Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks. Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation.
With Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right. It's about 7 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. It is program 379 in the series. It's April 20th. It's 1 hour before Easter, Lisa. And we have classic radio shows. My co-host is here, Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
Hi, Carl.
What's going on?
All good. What's going on?
Shantae Garth is here, our producer. She's in the booth. We have Dan Long, who is overseeing everything. So we're in good hands, Lisa Wolf.
Good hands. The good hands people are here.
Yes, indeed. We'll be here till 2 o'clock in the morning. We have Escape, starring Paul Frees, to start things off in just a few minutes. Then it's the Milton Berle Show from 1947, and then the Six Shooter with James Stewart, a good Western adventure. And you know what, Lisa? Tomorrow, or just in an hour or so, it's Easter. And I thought I would give everybody listening, every single person that is within earshot of my voice, an Easter present, an Easter gift. It's a digital download of the entire 2 hours, about 95 minutes, maybe less than 2 hours, Book of Mark from an audio Bible that I produced that has amazing stars in it. In fact, after a commercial break, we're going to play 5 minutes of it because it's the resurrection story. And I thought it would be fitting because, as I say, tomorrow is Easter. But the entire two-hour Book of Mark is available to everyone listening. I would urge you to download it and share it with your family and friends. The Book of Mark has the entire, it's word for word from Scripture, and it has amazing actors like Stacy Keach as John. We have Blair Underwood as Mark. He's amazing in this. Malcolm McDowell as Caiaphas. Brian Cox as the voice of God. Kristen Bell is Mary Magdalene. You will hear Kristen Bell in the five-minute clip we're going to play. Neil McDonough plays Jesus. We have John Rhys Davies is the narrator. We have Michael York in it as Luke. So incredible actors. And I know you played a part in this audio Bible as well.
I did. Do you remember what I played?
I think you were... Gosh,
I have it on my resume.
Been a
I'll
long
check it
time
out.
Ago.
We'll
play the resurrection scene from the Word of God. Now, here's where you can go, folks, and download the entire Book of Mark for free. It's a digital download. I want everyone to do it. It's my Easter gift to you. Go to wordofgodaudiobible.com. Word of God. audiobible.com. It's there waiting for you, and you cannot be downloading it at a better time. It has the entire Book of Mark is there, and there is the crucifixion scene, there's a resurrection scene, there's everything in the Book of Mark word for word. And as I said, you know, just a few minutes, we're going to play the resurrection scene. Stacy Keach, you're going to get to hear the great Stacy Keach narrating because he's John in that. But first, these words. All right, we're going to play this 5 minutes. It's a little Easter present to everybody. And as I said, there is a two-hour, a little bit more than night, I'd say about 100 minutes, the Book of Mark. It's available at wordofgodaudiobible.com. Feel free to download that. That's my Easter present to you. And, by the way, happy Passover to everyone also.
Thank you.
That started last night, right?
Those 7 days. Sundown.
That's right. Yep. Happy Passover.
Thank you.
And, of course, happy Easter.
Definitely.
And I hope you enjoy this. Now, in this clip, 5 minutes long, you're going to hear Stacy Keach's John. He's narrating the Book of John. You will hear Kristen Bell as Mary Magdalene, Neil McDonough as Jesus, and Raymond Arroyo as Thomas. Now, Jesus has just been crucified and his body has been put in the tomb. Let's pick it up right there.
Now, on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb early while it was still dark.
and saw that the stone had been taken away from the tomb. So she ran and went to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one whom Jesus loved.
They have taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they have laid him.
Peter then came out with the other disciple, and they went toward the tomb. They both ran. But the other disciple outran Peter and reached the tomb first. And stooping to look in, he saw the linen cloths lying there, but he did not go in. Then Simon Peter came, following him, and went into the tomb. He saw the linen cloths lying, and the napkin, which had been on his head, not lying with the linen cloths, but rolled up in a place by itself. Then the other disciple, who reached the tomb first, also went in, and he saw and believed. For as yet, they did not know the scripture that he must rise from the dead. Then the disciples went back to their homes. But Mary stood weeping outside the tomb, and as she wept, she stooped to look into the tomb. She saw two angels in white, sitting where the body of Jesus had lain, one at the head and one at the feet. They said to her,
"Woman, why are you weeping?"
"Because they have taken away my Lord, and I do not know where they have laid him."
Saying this, she turned round and saw Jesus standing, but she did not know that it was Jesus.
"Woman, why are you weeping? Whom do you seek?"
Supposing him to be the gardener, she said to him,
"Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have laid him, and I will take him away."
"Mary."
She turned.
"Rabboni."
Rabboni means teacher.
"Do not hold me, for I have not yet ascended to the Father. But go to my brethren and say to them, I am ascending to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God."
Mary Magdalene went and said to the disciples,
"I have seen the Lord."
And she told them that he had said these things to her. On the evening of that day, the first day of the week, the doors being shut where the disciples were for fear of the Jews, Jesus came and stood among them.
"Peace be with you."
When he had said this, he showed them his hands and his side. Then the disciples were glad when they saw the Lord.
"Peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, even so I send you."
And when he had said this, he breathed on them.
"Receive the Holy Spirit. If you forgive the sins of any, they are forgiven. If you retain the sins of any, they are retained."
Now Thomas, one of the 12, called the twin, was not with them when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, "We have seen the Lord." But he said to them,
"Unless I see in his hands the print of the nails, and place my finger in the mark of the nails, and place my hand in his side, I will not believe."
8 days later, his disciples were again in the house, and Thomas was with them. The doors were shut, but Jesus came and stood among them.
"Peace be with you."
Then he said to Thomas,
"Put your finger here, and see my hands, and put out your hand and place it in my side. Do not be faithless, but believing."
"My Lord and my God."
"Have you believed because you have seen me? Blessed are those who have not seen and yet believe."
Now Jesus did many other signs in the presence of the disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. and that believing, you may have life in his name.
That's Stacy Keach and a whole bunch of other actors in the resurrection scene from the Word of God audio Bible. And you can get a free download, the entire book of Mark. Blair Underwood is Mark at wordofgodaudiobible.com. Hope you will do that today or tomorrow or hopefully on Easter, maybe tomorrow, right? Happy Passover as well. And it's time now for some classic radio. It's time for Escape. Let's go back to October 22nd, 1947. This is called The Fall of the House of Usher. It is an Edgar Allan Poe story. Paul Frees stars. Part one now of Escape.
Are you upset with today's headline? Worried about the high cost of living? Want to get away from it all?
CBS offers you Escape.
You are the friend of a man living in death, confidant of a ghoul, witness to a nameless terror. You are a guest in the House of Usher.
The Columbia Broadcasting System and its affiliated stations present Escape, produced and directed by William N. Robeson, and carefully plotted to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
Tonight, we escape to a gloom-shrouded moor and a house where dread holds sway. As Edgar Allan Poe recounts it in his famous story, The Fall of the House of Usher.
It is with some regret, but I believe advisable that I identify myself only as a friend of Roderick Usher. Certainly the last and perhaps the only friend of that unhappy man. Having only one sister, he was the last male descendant of the ancient House of Usher. Roderick had been one of my boon companions in boyhood, but many years had elapsed now since our last meeting. And so as I held his letter in my hand, not yet opening it, I reflected with no little sadness upon the devious fates that chart our courses and drive old friends away from one another. But then a sudden feverish and nostalgic curiosity laid hold of me, and with fingers made clumsy by their eagerness, I tore open the letter and read,
"My dear friend, my need of you has so far outgrown my pride that I'm going to request a favor which I realize full well may involve considerable inconvenience to yourself. For some time past, I have been suffering from an acute bodily illness. Illness intensified by serious mental oppression, if I may so call it. A horror which looms over me. A horror grown so great I dare no longer face it alone. And so, in all humility, and for the sake of years gone by, I beseech you to come to me at once. Heir to the family estate in the north. Should events conspire to prevent your coming, then only God may know the consequences. Your friend in desperation, Roderick Usher."
And so it happened that at the end of a dull, dark, and soundless day in the middle of October, I found myself, as the shades of evening drew on, within view of the grim and melancholy House of Usher. I confess that the first sight of the house, the fungus-covered walls of stone thrusting their crumbling ramparts against the darkening sky, rising out of the sullen, sluggish waters of the black tarn at their base, the bleak, and vacant windows staring blindly, the bone-white trunks of decaying trees. These things filled me with a nameless and desolate terror, so that I reined in my horse and sat trembling, half fearing to cross the wooden bridge that led over the waters of the moat and up to the entrance of the House of Usher. Then impatiently I shook off this strange feeling of dread, and was an instant later clattering over the wooden bridge and onto the courtyard. I dismounted quickly, tossed my reins to the silent lackey who approached, strode across the gravel and up to the massive wooden portal, the door of the House of Usher. Good afternoon. My name is...
I know. You're the friend of Master Roderick. Please come inside, sir.
Thank you. But may I inquire how it happens you know me?
You have been expected for some time, sir.
It's true. But also I'm a stranger to you and could be some other visitor.
That you could be anyone other than the friend whom Master Roderick expects, sir, would be impossible. You see, no one else would ever come to this house.
Then I followed his stealthy footsteps through many dark and intricate passages. My earlier foreboding heightened and was made fearful by the somber aspect of the hallways by which we passed. The many unused rooms reaching out with their vast emptiness like some hideous jungle creeper. But at length, we stood before the door of the master studio, and there the servant left me, departed and left me to go in alone. The man across the room, half reclining on the couch, his back turned toward me, did not hear the opening of the door. For the space of several heartbeats, I saw only the deathly pale and ghastly sunken features of a stranger. Then only with difficulty could I recognize, behind that mask, my boyhood friend. For surely, under light of heaven, no man had ever before so terribly altered in so brief a time as had Roderick Usher.
Oh, my friend, you've come at last. Thank God you did come.
Oh, Roderick, did you not know I would? Could you not be sure that no long years would ever dim the friendship we shared in youth?
So many things have dimmed. Ah, youth. It seems so long ago. But now you're here, and we'll find it, relive it all over again, every glorious moment of it. And all these shadows, all these gibbering phantoms that haunt me, they'll be driven out. And then the sun will shine again, and we'll be young again and relive...
Roderick!
Oh, but forgive me, my friend. My excessive joy at the sight of you after so many years drives me into a frenzy of talk. How many years has it... Oh, no matter. It is enough that you are here, here, and brought with you all the lost, all the happy days of my boyhood.
But I'd expected from your letter to find you in serious straits indeed. Instead, you seem in the best of spirits.
You have the right to know. But in all frankness, here in your presence, I find it difficult to credit important to those things which only yesterday filled me with terror. True, I've been ill. A nervous affliction, something in the nature of a family weakness, probably. It has affected me with a morbid acuteness of the senses, such that quite often the least sounds and odors and colors become irritating beyond endurance. Then I've eaten but little, as you can see.
But surely you've retained the services of a physician.
A physician? Oh, yes, of course. He calls almost daily, though it is more often Madeline that he attends. You remember my twin sister, Madeline? For her, I fear more greatly than for myself. Even today, she's taken to her bed, and I have no doubt.
will never rise from it again.
Oh, a tragedy. The sympathies of my heart go out to you.
Oh, but leave it for the present. Leave it to dream of all those happy days we left so far behind. Everything will be different now that you're here. Do you remember when we were 12?
But the happy forgetfulness which Roderick found in my coming was short-lived. And in a few days, he had sunk into a morose torpor, from which only occasionally with frantic difficulty could he reach the joy of our first few hours of meeting. More often, his mental apathy was broken by bursts of vicious temper and violent ill humor. Fits I could only excuse on the basis of his illness. And that illness began in my mind to assume a most mysterious character. Being unable to divine its true nature from Roderick's hesitant offerings, I took the liberty of questioning the physician a few days later when I chanced to encounter him in a hallway.
Yes, she's resting as well as might be expected.
But she continues to decline. Is that not correct, Doctor?
That would seem to be the case.
And the malady, the illness which has stricken her, is it the same as that which affects her brother Roderick?
I may venture that it is.
Might I inquire the nature of this illness?
As to that, I am unable to say.
You imply, then, that I have no right to the information?
Not at all. I am confessing to you quite simply, sir. I do not know what afflicts Madeline and Roderick Usher.
And so, a week passed. A week in which the sullen, leaden skies darkened into deeper oppressiveness, in which Roderick's deathly pallor and creeping mental dissolution grew more apparent. A week in which the monstrous atmosphere of this ancient mausoleum began to crawl insidiously within my own consciousness, stirring into life a formless, unknown dread. Then one evening, we were sitting in the vaulted studio, while the first shadows of night began to flow together into pools of darkness. Roderick had been unusually troubled during the day and had been trying to find some solace by playing on the violin. Of a sudden, there came a knock upon the door.
Stop it! Stop that infernal pounding, do you hear? Do you wish to drive me completely mad? Open the door and come in, come in!
It's the doctor.
Well, what is it? What do you want?
Master Usher, I regret that I must say this, but it is my sad duty to inform you that your sister Madeline is no longer living.
Madeline, my sister, then she's dead?
She breathes no more.
Dead?
And perhaps, my dear doctor, you can tell me what caused her death.
Unfortunately, I can only take refuge in the term heart failure.
Heart failure? Yes, of course. Very well, Doctor. If you'll be kind enough to wait, I'll come down directly and discuss the arrangement.
At your service. I bid you good afternoon, gentlemen.
Roderick, I assure you of my deepest sympathy.
You do. Your deepest sympathy. The doctor regrets his sad duty.
Are you fools, both of you fools?
I don't understand.
Haven't you seen it yet? Can you not feel it about you? The horrid, monstrous, brooding spirit of this accursed house. Can't you hear its evil laughter as it lurks in the hallways and grows fat upon the soul? My dead sister.
Roderick.
Can't you see that it matters nothing to me that she's dead? That I myself walk but a few steps behind her into the same shadows of hell? Can't you sense those hideous tentacles even now reaching out for me? For me, who now the last living, if it be living,
the last living descendant of the accursed House of Usher.
That's the first portion of Escape with the Fall of the House of Usher, starring Paul Frees, a story by Edgar Allan Poe.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, Lisa, we are 15 minutes away from Easter.
Or like 20, but yeah. So close.
Yeah, and we're listening to Escape, Fall of the House of Usher. Let's go back to October 22nd, 1947 for the conclusion.
Such was the passing of Madeline Usher, once living, now dead. And her very death, untimely in its aspects, bore to my trembling soul a portent of events yet more hideous, more horrible, and yet to come. At a later hour of that same sad night, Roderick came into my chamber to voice an intention so morbidly unnatural that for the moment I could only feel that his tottering reason had at last failed him entirely.
Then you refuse?
But Roderick, this is madness.
I tell you, before this night is over, the coffin body of my sister shall rest in the vault beneath this house, and if you will not help me, I shall do it myself.
But why? Why?
I could not stand to think of her buried out there in the dark graveyard, alone among the dead.
Roderick, she too is dead.
It's fantastic how little we know of death or of life. The doctor says she no longer breathes.
She is dead.
She was so lovely, was my sister.
Roderick.
I must keep Madeline near me.
Nothing but evil would come of such an act.
I can trust no one but you. Not even the physician himself. He hates us because he can't discover what it is that kills us. Even he might steal the body of my beloved sister, and he might learn our secret. You understand, don't you, my friend?
Yes, Roderick. Yes. I understand. And so it came about, near midnight, we two alone made our way to an upper chamber of the house, and taking up the black coffin between us, in the shuddering light of candles, we walked the tortuous passageways, slowly descended the curving stairs of stone, passed beneath the moldy level of the earth, forced open a massive and age-rusted door of iron and stood at last, with our ghastly burden, in a subterranean, dank and musty crypt, underneath the House of Usher.
Over here, my friend, on these trestles. Now, a trifle higher with the head. There. Oh, may you sleep in peace and dream, sweet sister. From I who tread the same path soft behind you.
Come, Roderick. The thing is done.
Oh, wait. Stay a moment. We've not yet affixed the coffin lid. See? I've left it loose so it can be turned back.
No. I beg you.
A last farewell. No more. Look. Is she not beautiful?
Yes. She was very beautiful.
Was? Yes, of course. The look of her confused me. But do you not see it too? The warm glow of the cheeks, the eyes shut softly, those lips half parted. Does it not seem that she may rise up and speak to us at any moment?
This gruesome place inspires those morbid fancies.
Morbid fancies? But now dead she seems to live, and living seems already dead.
man you seek out madness. You court it with your very thoughts.
And if I do, what matters? What value can there be in reason without the hope of life? Dead, you say to me, she is dead. But what certainty? Why not with equal reason say instead she lives? And that I, the last of Usher, am the one who is already dead.
I prevailed upon my friend at last to leave that mournful place. And so with grim finality we secured the ebon lid, took up our flickering candles and departed from the crypt, leaving it alone with its darkness and death. The ponderous portal closed behind us. And then my soul, for one brief instant, felt the dread and awful meaning of eternity. There followed then a week of such dreary gloom and melancholy that my own spirit quavered at the menace of the nameless thing enshadowed in that house. By perceptible degrees, the living soul of Roderick Usher flickered lower. More ghastly grew his pallor, more tremulous the extremity of his terror. The eighth day following the death of Lady Madeline fell upon the last day of grim and gray October, and brought with it, as the curtains of night descended, the fitful breath of a rising tempest, uneasy gusts of sodden rain, and the sound of sullen, thunderous rumbles born of the dim flares of sheet lightning somewhere behind the lowering fall. I retired at a late hour, but found sleep impossible. At length, overpowered by some strange presentiment of evil, I found my reposeful inaction no longer endurable. And so I arose, threw on my clothes in haste, and fell to pacing the floor of my darkened chamber. Then in one instant, a soft sound in the blackness froze my steps in paralysis of terror. The latch of my chamber door was being lifted from without. Oh, was it? Was it, I say?
It is I, Roderick.
Oh, Roderick, what are you doing up and about at this hour, in pitch blackness? Wait, let me light the candles.
No, I am quite used to darkness. I heard your footsteps and knew that you must be awake, even as I was. But
can it be that you've not seen it?
I don't understand you. I've seen nothing.
Then stay. You shall see it, even as I've seen it for these past 2 hours. Wait, wait. I'll throw open the casement window. There. Look!
It was indeed a tempestuous yet sternly beautiful night, and one wildly singular in its terror and in its beauty. The exceeding density of the clouds which hung so low as to press upon the turrets of the house did not prevent our perceiving the velocity with which they flew careening from all points against one another. We had no glimpse of the moon or stars, but terrible to behold, the undersurfaces of the huge cloud masses, as well as all terrestrial objects immediately around us, were glowing in the unnatural light of a faintly luminous and clearly visible phosphorescence, which hung like a shroud about the mansion itself.
You see, my friend, tonight the thing grows bolder, gathers strength from the storm and from the dead soul it's eaten.
No, no, Roderick, you must not look at this. Here, I shall close this window and pull these curtains. And now, candlelight. Such darkness is the very mother of evil fear. There. Now come, sit here. Suppose I read aloud from some book or another.
As you wish.
I presume it matters little which. Oh. Here. Here's a volume of The Mad Trist by Canning. Will it serve?
As you said, it matters little.
I've always found the scene to be quite entertaining, wherein Ethelred dreams of fighting a dragon. Now, let's see. Oh, yes. Here it is. And so Ethelred waited no longer to hold parley with the hermit who mocked him from inside the hut. But feeling the rain upon his back and fearing the rising of the tempest, uplifted his axe and quickly made a hole in the plankings of the door for his gauntleted hand. And now pulling sturdily, he so cracked and ripped all asunder that the noise of the dry and hollow sounding would alarmed and reverberated throughout the forest.
Why do you stop?
Why, that's strange. I fancied I just heard the very sound I read about.
Let us say it was caused by the storm, Bray continue.
Oh, yes, the storm. Of course. But Ethelred, upon entering the door, was amazed to perceive no sign of the evil hermit, but instead a dragon of prodigious and scaly demeanor, which sat on guard before a shield of shining brass. And Ethelred uplifted his axe and struck the head of the dragon, which fell before him with a shriek so horrid and harsh, like whereof was never before. What sound is that?
Sound? The shriek of a dragon, my friend. Read on.
Very well. And now the champion, bethinking himself of the shield of brass, approached across the silver floor to where the shield hung upon the wall. But the shield, not waiting for his coming, loosed and fell upon the silver floor with a mighty great... And Roderick, I tell you, something moves within this house. That sound, it reverberated through the very walls. Can you tell me now you did not hear it?
Hear it now? Oh, yes, I hear it and have heard it. Long moments, hours, many days have I heard it. Yet I dared not speak. But why? Do you not know we put her living in the tomb? I tell you now, I heard her first feeble movements in the coffin many, many days ago, and I felt then it mattered little. But now she comes to upbraid me for my haste. And that last dread sound, yes, I heard it, the opening of a metal door to the crypt beneath the house. Now... she comes here. Have I not heard her footsteps on the stair? Do I not distinguish the heavy and horrible beating of her heart? Madman that I am, I tell you that she now stands without that door. But even now she opens it.
There in the flickering light of candles, in the gloom and curtained doorway stood the shrouded body of Lady Madeline. For one shuddering instant she swayed there. Then as Roderick uttered a single piteous cry, she fell upon him in violent and now final death agonies and bore him to the floor, a corpse. From that chamber and from that mansion, I fled aghast out the massive portal over the causeway into the night. Suddenly there shot along the path a wild light, and I looked back in heightened terror, for the vast house and its shadows were alone behind me. The baleful gleam came from the setting full and blood-red moon, which now shone vividly through a widening crack in the walls of the house itself, and even as I gazed, its vision opened rapidly. There came a fierce breath of the tempest. The entire lunar orb burst at once upon my sight. My brain reeled as I saw the mighty walls rushing asunder. There came a long, tumultuous, shouting sound like the voice of thousand waters. And the dark, deep tarn at my feet closed sullenly and silently forever over the pitiful ruins of the ancient House of Usher.
Escape is produced and directed by William N. Robeson, and tonight brought you The Fall of the House of Usher by Edgar Allan Poe, adapted for radio by Les Crutchfield, with Paul Frees as the narrator, Ramsey Hill as Roderick Usher, and Sheridan Hall as the physician. The special musical score was conceived and conducted by Cy Fuhrer. Next week...
You are the victim of a poor man, pursued from the west coast of Africa to the west end of London by a dead man's head, which grins at you upside down.
Next week, Escape, with H.G. Wells' gripping story, Pollock and the Poorer Man. Good night, then, until this same time next week, when CBS again offers you Escape.
That's Escape from October 22nd, 1947, Fall of the House of Usher. More after these words. All right, in our next hour, it's the Milton Berle Show. Then it's The Six Shooter with James Stewart.
Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Happy Easter, David.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, thank you. And happy Easter, Lisa. Happy Passover. Happy Easter to everybody. All right. Well, in this hour, the Milton Berle Show. Lisa, you like Milton Berle, right?
I sure do.
Right? And then in our next hour, it's the Six Shooter. We're going to play our game, too, right?
We're going to play a little Real or Ridiculous.
All right. Well, who's the celeb?
Oh, we need a celebrity?
Yeah.
How's Danny DeVito for
Danny
you?
Danny DeVito. Yep. I like him.
I like him, too. I met him once.
Did
it was
you?
A lot of fun.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And what caller would you like?
We're going to go with caller 5, and we're going to give away 2 tickets to see Dames at Sea, which is playing at Theater at the Center, which is in Munster, Indiana.
All right. Call us 312-981-7200. What caller do you want?
Caller 5.
Call now. We'll play the game live on the air right after these words. Come on, baby. Let's get
ridiculous. We've got Rob on the phone. I like tacos. Do you like tacos?
Yeah.
Tacos are good.
Oh, yeah.
It's fun to eat. Hey, Rob, how are you?
Hey, how are you folks doing for this Easter?
We're good.
We're good. So glad
you
made it through.
How are you? Happy Easter.
Are you hiding any Easter eggs anyplace?
Yeah. You know, it's funny you said that. I was driving with my daughter today, and she was playing a game on her iPhone. It's virtual Easter eggs while we were driving. She'd be like, oh, one block up, there's an Easter egg. It's right there. And I'm like, where? It's virtual. As we pass them, she hits something, and then it's like she got an Easter egg.
Oh, yeah.
Times are
changing. It's like Pokemon. It's like that.
Exactly.
And do you eat eggs, Lisa? You won't eat an egg, will you?
I'll eat an egg white omelet. That's about as far as I'll go.
She's very limited amounts of food that Lisa will eat.
Oh, my gosh. All right, let's do a little Real or Ridiculous. We've got Danny DeVito. Here we go.
Okay.
All right,
number one, he won a Golden Globe and an Emmy for his role on Taxi. Real or Ridiculous?
I would say real.
You like that one?
I'm going to agree with Rob.
That is right. That is absolutely real. So far, so good, you guys. Number two, he played Martini in the 1975 film One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Real or ridiculous? You got a good helper back there, Rob.
Well, I'm going to tell you this for sure. It's true. It's real. He did.
It's real. He sure did.
Yes,
and
indeed.
I remember it well. Number three, he made his feature directing debut with Throw Mama from the Train. Real or ridiculous?
I'll go with that one, too.
You like that one?
I don't think there's going to be three reels. So, because she's very tricky. So I'm going to say ridiculous.
Well, I'm tricky enough that I went with three reels. So.
Oh, man. Rob, you got it, buddy.
Rob, you did it. It's honestly.
You know what? I don't know if you got any hair on your head, Carl, but maybe she could dye that an Easter egg color.
That would look good. I do have some hair.
Not too much, but he's got a little bit. Rob, honestly, it's very rare that we got somebody that knows all three answers. Yeah. So you got a good little helper back
Way
there. Congratulations. You have won a pair of tickets to see Dames at Sea. It's playing May 2nd through June 2nd at Theater at the Center in Munster, Indiana. A loving parody of early Hollywood movie musicals. A girl arrives in New York City with a pair of tap shoes in her suitcase and falls in love with a sailor who's an aspiring songwriter. You will love it. They do great work at Theater at the Center, and I hope you love the show.
An ex-girlfriend of mine, we were part of the immediate founders for doing Munster before they moved to the center that they have there.
Really? Well, you know
I helped build the set when it used to be over on Calumet Avenue in a little side-by shop there that we did plays at for about 2 years.
Well, I never saw it there, but I've seen many shows at Theater at the Center. It's great. You have an opportunity to see it. I'm so happy you can get tickets at theateratthecenter.com. And thank you so much. You did such a great job. It was nice talking to you.
Way to go, Rob.
Okay, well, you folks both have a very happy Easter.
Thank you, too.
Thank you, Rob. He's a big winner, Lisa. All right. Well, Milton Berle is up next here. And by the way, folks, we have a text in line, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We'll be here till 2 o'clock in the morning. Feel free to text us.
And of course, we have a Facebook page, WGN Radio Theater. We'd love to hear from you on Facebook as well.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Milton Berle, he was really made a big splash when TV hit. You know, he became Mr. Television, but he did have a very long career on radio. He was on the radio a long, long time. We have a broadcast for you now from September 30th, 1947. This is a salute to Brooklyn. Here's part one now of the Milton Berle Show.
The Milton Berle Show. City, New York, here is the Milton Berle Show with Kurt Hilton, Jack Albertson, Billy Sam, Roger DeCoven, Jackie Grimes, our singing star Nick Carney, the music of Ray Block and the orchestra, and yours truly, Frank Gallo. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight we pay tribute to a great American community, Brooklyn. Many people think everyone from Brooklyn is a bum. They're wrong. Many people think Milton Berle is a bum. They're right. And here he is, Milton Berle.
Thank you. Thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Gallup, how can you start off with such a cruel joke? I mean, tonight, Brooklyn needs sympathy. Tonight, Brooklyn needs consolation. Tonight, Brooklyn needs pitches. Oh, Yankee Rooter, huh? There's good grief tonight, Mr. Gallup.
Burr, did you see the opening game of the World Series?
And when you think?
I say, did you?
I didn't hear what you said.
That's it.
Yes, let's say.
Did you see the opening game of the World Series?
Did I see the opening game? I had a seat between first and third.
Between first and third?
Yeah, right on Second Avenue. Yeah, there's a bar there that has television, you see. McGillicuddy's Old Romanian Bar and Grill. Mr. Gallup, you can't miss it. There's a man of distinction lying in the doorway.
Yes, I've noticed. I've noticed that most of the bars in New York now have televisions.
Yes, they all have. And that's the perfect way to see a baseball game, Mr. Gallup. No crowds, perfect view, sitting at the bar with a glass of beer. If there's a head in front of you, you can blow it off. Of course, you just can't sit there. Every inning, they expect you to buy a drink. But it's worth it. After the fifth drink, you're seeing a doubleheader. I mean, Mr. Gallup, it's just like a real game. You know the seventh inning stretch? Mm-hmm. Well, at this bar, they're stretched out before the game starts. Yes, Mr. Gallup, television is the coming thing, and when it comes...
You goes.
I goes? Mr. Gallup, I don't mind you making jokes about me, but at least you can be grammatical. Grammico. No kidding, Mr. Gallup. The least you can be is
Here, you read it.
Grammatical.
Thank you very much. Well, the least you can be is that. Really, Mr. Gallup, why do you persist in hurling those acrimonious and abusive epithets at me? Why, kid?
Oh, no.
Wait for the laugh, old boy. Why do you throw those at me, huh? Why?
Well, nevertheless...
Wait, did you get that? Did you hear what I just said? Did you... Epithets, acrimonious, and I couldn't say I still can't say it. Go ahead.
Well, nevertheless, Burl, when television arrives, you leaves.
I leaves? That's more like it. That's better than you goes. Mr. Gallup, must we always fight? Tonight, we are paying tribute to Brooklyn. It's in a spirit of friendship. Should we... join in.
Perhaps you're right, Milton.
That's the spirit. You know, Frank, I...
Frank?
Well, Mr. Gallup, I didn't mean to say Frank. I didn't know what I was saying.
You called me Frank?
Well, it slipped
Burl,
out.
Burl, only one other person ever had the audacity to call me Frank. My mother.
Your mother called you Frank?
That's why I left home.
Oh, no!
I could bear just so much informality.
Oh, gosh, Mr. Gallup, I thought we were getting along so well.
Yes, Burl, I've noticed of late a certain feeling of comradeship, friendliness, and warmth growing between us.
I know.
This I find particularly nauseating.
Mr. Gallup, please, just for tonight, let's be friends. Here, take my hand.
You know my address. Send it to me.
Boy, I'm a ham, but I don't know about you. Raising the audience to applaud at that crack. It's all right, Mr. Gallup. Go ahead, be your own master of ceremonies. Go ahead. But let me just tell you one word. Grammatical. You know, you do 5 shows a day at the Roxy and you try to pronounce an out-of-town word like that. Boy, what business I'm doing at the Roxy. What a week. I've looked at more empty seats than my tailor. How can you sleep with the lights on? Well, I am. On with the program, Mr. Gallup. On with the program. And don't wave to the audience anymore, please. Because we'll both get waved goodbye from the program. But on with the program as we pay tribute to a community that has withstood the ravages and insults and ridicule. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight we salute Brooklyn. Block, great block, block, block. Great block, stop it, stop. What's that? I said Brooklyn. Now pull yourself together. And there's a lot to pull together, too. We salute Brooklyn. Oh, well, that's better. Brooklyn, shining isle of the Atlantic. Brooklyn, gem of the eastern seaboard. Brooklyn, home of hardy pioneers who have fought civilization to a standstill. Brooklyn, here in this tropical paradise, we find a drowsy, easygoing people. Half the people are always asleep, and the other half are the ones who put them to sleep. So join me, won't you? Tolerant listener, won't you? On an expert, are you sitting on a feather out there? The lady laughed out there. Join me on this expedition into the strange, exotic land of make-believe, Brooklyn. Yes, as we cross the Williamsburg Bridge and approach Brooklyn, a border patrol checks our passports. They go through our luggage carefully, removing all of our valuables. If you have any place to go, go ahead. They go through our luggage, carefully removing all our valuables and disappearing with them into the night. I loused that one up, but at last, ladies and gentlemen, we are in Brooklyn. As we set foot on Brooklyn soil, a friendly hand comes out to welcome us. Ow! Hastily, we explain to him that I am neither Happy Chandler nor Noel Coward. I say to him, I am Milton Berle.
Duh.
Quaint mysterious Brooklyn, rich in natural resources. In our knapsacks, we have brought trinkets to trade with the natives for their precious ivory. And we are told that this ivory is found in abundance in a section called Ebbets Field. This ivory is also known as the St. Louis Cardinal's teeth. But let us go on and meet the people of this flower of North America, Brooklyn. Here we are on the corner of Flatbush and Myrtle Avenue. Let us pick up at random one of the many Brooklynites hurrying by. Let us speak to him so that we may hear his strange, colorful Brooklyn speech. Excuse me, sir. May I have a word with you?
Well, I'm in a beastly hurry, but carry on, old bean.
Wait a minute. You are a Brooklynite?
I jolly well am. Born and raised in Brooklyn, you know, and deucedly proud of the old borough.
Thank you.
Cheerio.
Thank you. Yes, it is these people who make Brooklyn. For it's they... Oh, here comes another Brooklynite. Excuse me, sir.
I heard you. What am I, thief, hey?
Well, I would like to...
Don't raise your voice to me, you jerk.
Yeah, but I just want to ask you a question.
Okay. Keep your shirt on, hey.
All right. How long, young man, have you lived in Brooklyn?
Since yesterday. I just moved there from Texas.
Thank you, Tex McCrary, and give my regards to Jinx. But the hour grows late. And as our trusty subway pulls out of the station, we hear the soft chant of the natives as they call after us, Aloha, Malaga, Mahala, which translated means...
Hit the road, you fat slob!
Yes, Mr. Gallup, it's the old days in Brooklyn that everyone remembers. When you think of those wonderful bygone years with that one and only girl, you just can't help but sing...
I want to hang my hat on a tree that grows in Brooklyn. I want to dip my feet in the Gowanus Canal.
Ah, Cynthia. Cynthia, golden memories of Cynthia in old Brooklyn. I remember the first time I ever met you, Cynthia. You had a job in the Brooklyn Navy Yard on those battleships. They used to pull you through the guns to clean them out. But Cynthia, you didn't mind as long as you were near sailors. Yes, darling, Cynthia, there was something about sailors you loved. Rolling them. Ah, but how proud you were, Cynthia, that day that they named that ship after you, the Big Schmo. Remember the launching? You broke the bottle of champagne, and before the ship hit the water, you were on the ground lapping it up. But Cynthia, I remember you best at Coney Island. That wonderful day when you won that contest at Coney Island. The hot dog eating contest. What a record you set. 46 frankfurters in 3 minutes. Then you were disqualified. You didn't wait until they were cooked. Ah, Cynthia. Cynthia, how we laughed at the way you looked in those mirrors in the funhouse. If you only looked as good as that in real life. Ah, those rides we had on the roller coaster. Your head would be on my shoulder, and how I warned you against standing up while the roller coaster was tearing along. Then one day you stood up. Boing, boing, boing. Yes, your head was still on my shoulder. But where were you? And while I'm still waiting for the rest of you, I'll sing...
I want to hang my hat in Brooklyn, where the things are always cooking. I want to hang my hat in dear old Brooklyn.
That's the first portion of the Milton Berle Show, September 30th, 1947. A salute to Brooklyn. We'll get back to it in just a moment. All right, in our next, right after the news, we're going to have the conclusion to the Milton Berle Show, and then James Stewart stars as a Britt Ponsett, the six shooter. That's coming your way.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Right, it's Easter, everyone. What are you doing today for? You doing anything for Easter?
Don't
probably not.
Easter, I didn't think so. It doesn't change my day.
I do celebrate it. What are you doing for Passover?
Well, we had a Seder on Friday night at my mother-in-law's house.
And you had a Seder?
A seder is like a family dinner.
Right.
And
I know what a seder is.
Read part of the Haggadah. And
Haggadah.
The Haggadah.
Haggadah Davida?
Haggadah Davida, yes. Uh-huh. And it's just a family kind of a weekend.
Right. Oh, yeah. And you had everyone over? Were they at your house?
Not at my house.
No.
At my mother-in-law's house. So.
Did you cook something?
I did.
What'd you make?
I made apple matzah kugel.
Oh, apple matzah kugel.
Apple matzah.
I'm
going to
guess
delicious.
What this is. It's okay. Like I'm going to guess it's a bunch of apples.
A bunch is right.
Like, and cinnamon.
A little bit butter. Of cinnamon. A lot of butter.
And is it like a strudel or what is it?
It's not.
Okay.
And it's matzah and apples and eggs and sugar and
butter.
Oh, there's
eggs in it.
There are.
Just the egg whites, I'm guessing.
No, no.
Put everything in there?
Yeah, not just that.
You mix
easily,
it all in? And is it like a cake or what is it?
No, it's a kugel.
It's a kugel?
A kugel. It's a K-U-G-E-L, kugel.
A kugel.
Kugel, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
I'll have to. If I had any left, I'd bring some for you, but it was delicious.
Oh, that sounds good. Yeah. You didn't bring me any?
I didn't.
Oh,
it's gone.
That's very nice of you.
I know.
Thank you very much.
You're so welcome.
I really appreciate you
next time.
Thinking about me.
Next time. What are you doing for Easter today?
I am
going to
take my mom, my sister, taking my daughter. Amanda's in town. My son. And we're gonna have a big old dinner.
Do you go out
yeah,
or somebody
gonna,
cooks?
Yes, we're going to a restaurant.
Where do you go?
We are gonna go to a nice restaurant.
Good. Enjoy it. So make sure to bring me something.
I will.
Something.
What would you want?
Something chocolatey.
Chocolatey? All right. Mm-hmm. See, I'll bring you something.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Very special.
You're
something
welcome.
Special.
All right, it's time now for the conclusion to the Milton Berle Show.
And now, as we continue our salute to Brooklyn, we now present...
Brooklyn Forum tonight. Brooklyn Forum tonight. The question, will living in Brooklyn ever take the place of jungle warfare?
Thank you, Mr. Gallup. And now let's get on with the questions from the floor. Let's start right here with this tall gentleman with the alligator bags under his eyes. Yes, sir?
Mr. Berle, me and a bunch of my friends came all the way from Brooklyn just to catch you at the Roxy.
What happened? Did you catch me?
No, we caught the wrong guy. He's still in the hospital.
How do you like that? There's a campaign not to waste food, and this guy comes all the way from Brooklyn to leave an egg. Next. All right, this young man coming up here wearing the suede pumps with the platform heels. Young man, what is your name?
My name is Harry Truman.
Harry Truman?
Don't confuse me with the president.
Oh, no, I won't.
His name is Harry S. Truman.
I know.
Mine is Harry M. Truman.
I see. What does the M stand for?
Margaret.
Harry, you have a question about Brooklyn?
I got no questions about Brooklyn. I like Brooklyn.
Well, we're just
always not... somebody is criticizing Brooklyn. What's the matter with Brooklyn?
There's nothing wrong.
Then stop criticizing. What are you, a wise guy or something?
No, I just...
I come from Brooklyn. I'm proud of it.
Yeah, but always...
I was born in Brooklyn. I live in Brooklyn. I hope I drop dead in Brooklyn.
I didn't say...
Who gave you the famous men? George Washington, Frank Sinatra, Chiang Kai-shek, Brooklyn.
Look,
who grows
you...
the most oranges? Who gave us all our presidents? Who discovered America? Brooklyn.
Please, wait.
Ah, shut up, you Bronx bum!
Please, we must control ourselves. Young man, let's have your question again.
Okay. Would you like to buy a 1922 Essex?
Oh, please, sit down. Let's hear the woman's side. All right, this young lady in the aisle squeezing grapes with her bare feet. Young lady, what is your name, please?
Tallulah Feeney. I'm a homemaker.
I see. And you have a question concerning Brooklyn.
Yeah. How can I stop my husband from being such a loyal Dodger fan? He's driving me nuts.
He's very loyal?
Loyal? Just say the word Dodger and he takes off his hat, falls down on his knees, and kisses his Leah DeRocher button.
Oh, he's loyal, all right.
He even got a tattoo on his chest that says Dodgers.
Really?
To show he ain't prejudiced, he also got a tattoo that says Yankees.
On his chest?
Are you kidding?
I get it.
He's always getting into fights at Ebbets Field.
He gets into fights?
He got so much glass in his head from pop bottles, I could get a deposit back on him.
Well, no wonder.
You should have seen my husband the day the Dodgers won the pennant.
What did he do?
He come running home yelling, the Dodgers won the pennant for the first time in 6 years. Then he gave me a big kiss.
He gave you a kiss?
It was the first time in 6 years for me, too.
Mrs. Feeney, now that the World Series is on, your husband must be impossible.
Yeah, he told me if the Dodgers lose the World Series, he's going to throw himself out the window.
If the Dodgers lose, he'll throw himself out the window?
Yeah. Come on, Yankees!
Thank you, Mrs. Feeney. And now, let us all bow our heads in devotion to Brooklyn as we sing.
Hail to thee, majestic Brooklyn, let us all rejoice. We salute thy mighty land from the bridge to Benson Hoist.
Coney Island, Prospect Park, and Brighton by the sea.
We all love the sight of Brooklyn and the smell of the BMT.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, here he is once again, a young singing star, Dick Farney, to sing.
When she looks you in the eye and your heart begins to sigh, it's just plain love. When she takes you by the hand and says, oh, I think you're grand, it's just plain love. It's just plain love. It lives eternally. So if you're happy down inside, just because she's by your side, it's just plain love. It's just plain love. It's just plain love. It's just plain love. It lives eternally. So if you're happy down inside, just because she's by your side, sure as stars are above, it's just plain.
Wonderful. That was nice and soothing for the dampened spirits in Brooklyn tonight. And don't worry, Dodgers, you'll have your day. Look at Leo DeRosa. He had his day. Mr. Oh, that's all right. Good joke. But not for me. Mr. Gallup, did I ever tell you what happened to me once at Ebbets Field?
Yes.
Would you like to hear it again?
No.
Okay, if you insist, here's what happened. It was earlier this season, Mr. Gallup. I took my little son, Junior, out to Ebbets Field to see the Dodgers play the St. Louis Cardinals.
Junior tickets this way, Junior tickets.
Here you are, sir. There's tickets for my son and me.
Wait a minute. A half-price ticket for this kid?
Oh, well, he's only five, aren't you, Junior?
Yeah. Da-da.
Okay, going.
Come on, Junior. I don't want to miss a minute of the game.
Da-da.
All right, we're in already.
Oh, all right.
Put away that teething ring. Let's get to our seats. Oh, boy. At last, a baseball game.
Give me a hot dog, Pop.
Junior, you just had lunch. Now let's get to our seats.
I'm hungry. The ride out here gave me an appetite.
A ride in a packed subway gave you an appetite? What are you, a cannibal or something? I'm not getting you a hot dog.
You're kidding.
No, you're not getting a hot dog.
Okay, step aside. Here it comes.
No, Junior, please.
I'll kill myself.
No, Junior.
I'll
Junior,
myself.
Please.
Where's the gas?
Junior,
light?
Please. Junior, please.
Stop it. Stop it.
All right. Oh, brother. What a kid. You win. I'll get you the hot dog and I'll meet you at the seats. Junior.
Here's your seat, Pop.
Oh, boy. What a struggle. Here's your hot dog.
I don't want it now. You eat it.
You don't want it? I had to knock down an old man to get it. All right, I'll eat it. Gee, the game started.
It's just the first inning.
Oh, good. Only the first inning. What's the score?
12-16.
Oh, a pitcher's duel. Well, I still have 8 innings to see. Who's up now?
Brooklyn. Stanky's at bat.
Oh, Stanky. Good. Come on, Stanky!
Ball one!
Gee, nice crowd.
Ball two!
Hey, you know, that's bunk about Dodger fans being tough.
Ball three!
Look, Junior, look how orderly they are.
Strike!
Junior, are you all right?
Yeah, where are you, Pop?
Here, under the seat. What's happened? What happened?
They're burying the umpire behind second base.
Oh, that's nice. He would have liked it that way. Oh, shh, the game's starting again.
I'm hungry, Pop. I'll take my hot dog now.
Yeah, well,
hot dog.
Hot dog. I ate it.
You're kidding.
No, Junior. Junior, you said that
I'll kill myself.
No, Junior.
I'll kill myself.
Don't start again. Junior, don't start.
Give me a gun.
Junior, stop it. Please. Now put your eyes back in your head now. Okay, I'll get you a hot dog. Here I go under the stands again. Geronimo. Here's the hot dog, Junior. I ran all the way.
You sure made speed, Pop. You weren't gone 2 minutes.
I guess I didn't miss anything. I see Stanky still at bat.
Yeah, but it's the sixth inning.
Sixth inning? What's the score?
22-18.
What are they doing, playing on pogo sticks? Okay, now for some baseball. Who's at bat?
Stanky.
Come on, Stanky! Well, come on, umpire. What was it?
Strike.
Junior, come on. Let's go home.
They're starting again, Pop.
Good, good. Who's at bat?
Stanky.
But he was just up.
They lost count.
Oh, I see.
Popcorn, peanuts, hand grenades.
Junior. And please, do me a favor, Junior, sit down.
I'm hungry. Get me some peanuts.
No, Junior, you'll ruin your appetite for dinner.
Mother's cooking tonight.
Oh, good idea. Peanuts. Hey, one bag of peanuts.
Okay, catch.
Ow, ooh, ooh, my nose. Hey, will you watch how you throw them, please?
Don't change the subject. You owe me a dime.
Here's a half a dollar. Catch.
Got it. Here's your change. Catch.
That's great. All in pennies. Now I got to get under the seats and pick them up. Well, nothing's happening anyway. Here goes. Get off. Junior, what happened? What happened?
Stanky doubled, Robinson single, Walker homered, there was a triple play, the Cardinals came up, scored 4 runs, Karowski homered with bases loaded, the score is tied 26-26. What a ball game!
Yep. Now who's up?
Stanky.
Must be his bat and ball. Quiet. Junior, quiet. What? Here's the pitch.
Ball one.
What's with that umpire?
They run out of men.
Oh, I see.
Hey, Milty Bell.
Hey, look, Pop, behind you. It's Lou Parker.
I'm not turning my head.
Hey, Milty.
Can't you just turn around for a second? Answer him.
Well, I guess I better. What is it, Lou? What happened? I just turned my head. What happened?
Stanky triple. Robinson walked. Yeah. Reese doubled off the scoreboard and was caught sliding into third.
Yeah.
There was a fight at second base.
Light
the Cubs
second.
Came up and made 4 runs.
Yeah.
Then the game was held up for a little while on account of rain.
What's the score?
62-61.
Nice tight game. Who's up?
The Cardinals.
Good. Who's the batter?
Stanky.
Stanky? He's with Brooklyn.
While you had your head turned, he was traded.
That does it. Junior, come on, let's go home.
No, Pop, we're staying to the end.
You're kidding.
No, Pop, we're staying.
Okay, here it comes.
No, Pop.
I'll kill myself.
No, steady. I'll kill myself.
Shut up. Thank you very, very much. Well, that about winds up the hilarity for tonight. Mr. Gallup, how about telling the folks who's appearing in person this week at the Roxy?
Of course. Stanky.
Thank you, Pee Wee Reese. Good night, ladies and gentlemen.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
That guy just said it was that this is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Yeah, that's where we're on.
I don't think it is.
It's all NBC.
I do not think this is NBC,
and
the National
tell you that we've gotten
company.
So many texts, and everybody's loving this episode.
Yeah.
So we're so glad that you appreciated the humor.
Milton Berle. Well, he was a pretty funny guy. Saw him, kind of fringely met him with George Burns one time over at the Beverly
Worship
Country Club. I was on time for George. When George would want to have lunch with me, I was always on time.
Well, you
George.
Learned your lesson.
Yeah, I was late one time for Jerry Lewis, and
that was
not good. He left me.
Well, you're never late for me.
He left hanging. I'm always early.
You're always
right?
early.
If I say I'm going to pick you up at 9:45,
you're there
I'm
like 8:30.
I'm there at 9:15.
It's true.
All right, that's the Milton Berle Show, broadcast from September 30th, 1947. A salute to Brooklyn, and I hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a quick break, then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
How Acura. Can you talk that fast?
RZA, no,
that's a real art.
RZA Acura there. Acura has a new sports car. I had an Acura NSX.
I had an Acura.
Years ago, I had an Acura NSX. It was a pretty cool sports car.
I had
an
Acura.
And now that, yeah? What
yeah,
kind?
The sedan. I don't remember which one it was. It's just a regular sedan.
Not as
sedan.
Exciting as the NSX.
For
that
me,
that was a good looking
it
car.
It was actually
way.
A
Roger,
great
I
car.
Had, what, the sedan or the NSX?
No, the NSX.
Yeah.
I saw the NSX.
I had one.
Oh, gosh, this was 90.
It was a matchbox
in the 90s.
Of it, but I had one.
Yep.
No, no I had one. I had
it's,
a red
it's
one
a
with
very
the,
good looking car.
Yeah, it was red with black interior.
Okay.
And a cool car. And now yeah. I think they have a new one. I think they have a new NSX, the Acura.
Acura makes
they,
great
they
cars.
Haven't stopped. They didn't stop making it for a while, did they?
Yeah, they stopped making
it. Oh, they
it.
Did?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
They haven't
okay.
made the NSX in a long, long time.
Okay, okay.
But I did have one, you know. Those
back in the,
were, those
back
were
in the,
the
day.
Days. I
back
had
when
one.
He was young and impetuous.
Yeah, it was a pretty cool
he's,
car.
He's old, but he's still impetuous.
My brother and I drove it all the way to Florida, to Naples, Florida, one time together. It was fun. And I got pulled over.
I bet you did.
Got pulled over in it. Oops. Yeah, I got pulled over in it. It's a long story. We don't have enough time to talk about it.
We definitely do not.
But the police officer let us go.
Really?
And we were going fast.
What'd you do for that? Him?
Yeah, really?
Nothing. I mean, it was kind of a long story. We were... What happened?
That's okay.
What happened was, again, I wouldn't have enough time, so I can't tell you.
As he starts
I'll
the story,
tell you another
I'll
time.
Tell you another time.
But you know what I do want to mention? The Classic Radio Club, folks. You know what? This is a club for you. Roger loves it. If
yeah,
you like
course.
Classic radio, learn about the Classic Radio Club. I won't go into a lot of detail. Just go to our website, classicradioclub.com. You'll get 10 classic radio shows every single month. So 10 new shows. In fact, I talked to one of our Classic Radio Club members from New York today, and she said, you know what is the most fun about being part of the Classic Radio Club?
I'm going to guess.
What?
I would say not knowing what you're going to get. Just
exactly
opening up
right.
the box.
We talked
and
about this.
It's like a surprise box,
yeah.
and you don't know exactly what you're going to get, like a box of chocolate.
She said that's the thing she likes the most about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's like...
I mean, she loves the quality
love
and all that.
That.
She said she loves getting the box in the mail.
And being exposed to new shows that
yeah.
you don't... Don't already know and
right.
just finding out what you get every month.
And she said she loves the liner notes and learning
I like
about
that
the shows.
Too.
I said, you know, that's so nice to hear that because that's the whole concept here. It's 10 shows every month And I picked them out of the 100,000 shows we have. They're all from master recordings, so they sound incredible. They sound like high fidelity. And then we send you these liner notes. You get them on CDs, five CDs in a collector case. If you don't want CDs, you can get digital downloads. It's a little less expensive. But the first month, it's only $1. So if you want to check it out for a dollar to see what the 10 shows are the first month, and then if you stay in the club, you'll get 10 more shows every single month. You can cancel at any time. You'll never get a duplicate show. They're always full-length shows, nothing edited out. And like this young lady I was talking to today about it, you may love finding out and getting a surprise every single week.
I think it's kind of like when you were a kid and you open the cereal box and you dump it all out to find the surprise at the bottom of the box.
Right. Even if I didn't like the cereal, I'd be like, Ma, buy that cereal.
Of course.
There was a little G.I. Joe
like a
doll
ring or something in it. And that would be it.
Something I'd want. But anyway, folks, check it all out. It's only a dollar the first month. Go to classicradioclub.com. All right, in our next hour, James Stewart stars as Britt Ponsett, the six-shooter. This show was phenomenal. It was just an incredible Western show. Unfortunately, it only lasted one season because it came so late. Came to radio in 1954, and so radio was really kind of giving way to television at that time. So it only had a very short run on radio, but we have an episode, a terrific quality episode for you from 1954, starring James Stewart.
And we will be giving away two tickets to see Dames at Sea, which is playing at Theater at the Center, so stay tuned for that.
All right, that's in the next hour.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right. It is 1:07 in the morning. Thanks, Roger. And it is Easter morning. And this is hour three. So thanks for staying up late with us here on the WGN Radio Theater. Lisa Wolf and I are here every single Saturday and Sunday beginning at 11 p.m. playing all your favorite classic radio shows, you know, like Gunsmoke and Jack Benny, Boston Blackie, The Whistler, Have Gun, Will Travel, and shows like The Six Shooter, which is coming up in this hour. James Stewart starring as Britt Ponsett, and that's a broadcast from 1954. But right now, Lisa, we're
going to play a little Real or Ridiculous, and the celebrity is John Goodman.
John Goodman.
Okay, right. So get into the John Goodman mode.
Cat's Pride is our sponsor of this game.
That is true. And we are going to give away two tickets to see Dames at Sea, which is going to be playing at Theater at the Center, which is in Munster, Indiana. It's a great theater. They do great work there.
Want to win two tickets to see a fun play?
Call now. We're going to look for caller number 3312-981-7200. Call right now. We'll be right back. Come on, baby. Let's get ridiculous. And we have John on the phone. We're going to play a little real or ridiculous. Hey, John. We have you? Uh-oh. I think we just lost him.
Oh, we lost John. All right, so I'll play with you, Lisa.
All right. Well, if he calls back, he's still going to be the winner. We still have a pair of tickets for him. So, John, give us a call back, and play or don't play, we still have some tickets for you for Theater at the Center to see Dames at Sea.
We had a ton of people on the line. But
I know. Or somebody else, if they come, you guys can try calling again, but I'll start the game.
All right.
Just so we don't lose time. Okay, number one, this is John Goodman. Okay, Carl?
Yep.
Okay, number one. He was the first guest on Late Night with Conan O'Brien.
Mm-mm.
Real or ridiculous?
Ridiculous.
That was real.
What?
That was in 1993. Absolutely real. So far, so good. Do we have John on the phone again? I think we do.
Come on.
Maybe he can play the next one with us. Well, he's with us.
Oh, he's here?
Yeah.
He is?
Yep.
You're on?
Okay. All right. We'll just keep going. Number two. In the 2001 film Monsters, Inc., he was the voice of Mike.
Yes, that is real.
I'm so sorry.
Wait, he's in Monsters, Inc.
Yeah, but he was the voice of Sully.
That's not nice to
do
that.
He was Sully. You got so excited you thought you
not
knew
nice.
One. That is nice.
I know he's in Monsters, Inc.
You got so excited you said yes even
so
before
I
finished.
I think I've gotten like every single one of these
wrong. I think you have. And there's one more. You ready? His first acting job was on a commercial for Burger King. Real or ridiculous?
You're so sneaky. It's probably McDonald's. I'll say real.
Yes, you got one right.
I got
that
one
is
right.
Absolutely real.
You know what I should do?
No, what should you do?
I should just not think about. I should just plug my ears when you're reading it,
right.
And when it's time, just say real or ridiculous.
I think pretty much
I would do
you
better.
Just plug yours when I talk anyway, so there would not be anything
well,
new.
If I didn't,
well, guess what, Carl?
I would go insane.
Carl, I have something to tell you.
Why
you?
Yeah.
You, Carl
Me?
Amari,
I won tickets.
Have won two tickets to see Dames at Sea playing
yeah.
May 2nd through June 2nd at Theater at the Center in Munster, Indiana.
Well, here's what I'll do. Porsche Exchange in Highland Park is one of our sponsors. If they'll loan me one of their Porsches, I'll
right.
drive up to Munster, Indiana, in it, and I'll watch that play.
Well, even if you don't,
yeah.
it's worth a trip to head out to Munster, Indiana, see Dames at Sea. It's a parody of an early Hollywood movie musical, and they do great work. I haven't seen the show because it hasn't opened, but I do go to many of the shows there, and I can vouch for the wonderful quality of their productions. Check it out. Go to,
you know,
it
would be really
tickets.
Cool, though.
Check it out and go to theateratthecenter.com.
What would be really cool, though?
What would be really cool?
Is if
John called back and won the tickets?
No. Yeah, that too. But if Porsche Exchange loaned me a Porsche for one night.
What's the me?
Just to drive.
First of all.
Two Porsches. You could have one, too.
First of all.
Can
you
drive a Porsche?
Me.
Do you know how to drive stick?
Second of all.
Can you
not
drive stick?
No,
can you drive stick?
No, I cannot any longer. But.
What do you mean?
Not all
you used
Porsche,
to be able to?
I did. Not all Porsches are stick shift.
I know,
so
but
let's
if you're
going to
drive
here.
A Porsche,
no, thank
like
you.
A 911, you got to drive a stick.
Now, when I learned how to drive a car, I had a stick shift because my brother had a stick shift. He had a Honda Civic stick shift car.
Yeah.
Many, many years ago. So I can't tell you how many times it died, but I learned playing
I learned
stick
how
shift.
To drive a stick shift on my brother's car. It was a Triumph Spitfire.
Same thing.
Yeah.
But no longer
you don't drive
I,
a Porsche 911 in an automatic.
I didn't say I wanted a 911. Drive.
That's
I
what
think
I
I'll
want.
Take that Porsche,
the Cayenne.
Yes,
Cayenne's
exactly.
Nice. Yeah,
that'd be
nah,
really nice.
If I'm gonna drive a Porsche, it's gonna be a 911 convertible.
All right, but
Spider.
Also I don't
yeah.
want it just for a day. If I have it, I'd like to keep
They're
it.
They're not gonna give it to me longer than a day.
Well,
Lisa.
Well, they can just do like a year lease. just let
yeah,
me know.
Throw
I'll choose
that
the color
in.
I
just
want.
Throw that in. All right. Well,
All right.
I might have to take a ride over there to Porsche Exchange in Highland Park just to. Mm-hmm. Just
can,
to peruse all the Porsches over there.
Well, we'll do it together. That
all
would
right.
be a lot
well,
of fun. We'll test
yeah.
drive.
Yeah, it's test drive a
let's
Porsche.
Test drive.
Ooh. Your dad drives a Porsche.
He
your
does.
Dad's cool. That's why.
Well, that's he is.
He's cool.
Yes, he does.
If you drive a Porsche, you're cool. All right. It's time now for the Six Shooter. This was a great series. I got to tell you, James Stewart was absolutely perfect in this role of kind of a good guy, frontier drifter. Named Britt Ponsett. Premiered on radio in late 1953, Ponsett carried a gray steel six gun with an unmarked rainbow mother of pearl handle. People called them both the Six Shooter. So this is a broadcast from May 6, 1954. It's called Anna Norquist. Really cool show. Listen to this. Part one now of the Six Shooter.
James Stewart as the Six Shooter. The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother of pearl. Its handle, unmarked. People call them both the Six Shooter. The NBC Radio Network presents James Stewart as the Six Shooter, a transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the Western territories, leaving behind a trail of still-remembered legends.
It was Friday morning when I got to Smoke Falls on my first trip to town in about 3 months. Dad Foster needed a little extra money for feed, so he asked me to drive about a dozen of his heifers in and sell them at Saturday's auction. Well, I turned the cattle over to Brad McLean. He was the auctioneer. And then, seeing as about noontime, I wandered into Windy Night's Cafe. Windy's food's real good, too. Corned beef and cabbage, boiled potatoes, rice pudding for dessert. Real tasty. There was only one drawback to eating there. Windy.
And then Ned Burt. He's a marshal now, Brett. But I guess you knew that, didn't you?
Well, as a matter of fact, I didn't.
Sure. He was elected last July. 102 votes was cast. 102. Well, that's the biggest election we've ever had in this town. The biggest in this part of the state, for all I know.
Well,
unless you count Fort Lyons. And over there, they ain't very particular who they let vote. Why, I hear tell there was a drummer passing through the town last election day, and they just drug him right off to the polls.
Don't say.
Yeah, I'll just bet you, if there was to be an honest census, we'd show up with a good 20 more people in Fort Lyons.
Let me show. Well, it sure was a fine meal, Wendy.
Where do you think you're going, Britt? You ain't let me tell you about Marshal Burke finding Seth Quincy's body.
Huh?
Well, what did you think I was leading up to?
Well, I didn't exactly know.
Yeah, a week ago last Monday, that's when it happened.
Oh.
Yeah, the reason I remember so plain is, along about 10 o'clock in the morning, it started to thunder, and I said to Mrs. Coombs, I run into her coming down Main Street, I said, Mrs. Coombs, I said, don't let that thunder fool you. It ain't going to rain the first week in September. No, sir. I lived around here for 17 years, and it ain't never rained after the 25th of August. That's what I said.
Yeah. Well, now, what about Mr. Quincy?
Well, I was coming to that, Brett. Can't you give a body a minute?
Oh, sure, Wendy.
Now, where was I? Oh, yes. Well, he was lying on the floor of his parlor when Marshal Burke come in. They say the place looked like he'd put up quite a fight, too. Broken furniture and glassware all over the place.
I see.
A slug in his chest, that's what killed him. Shooting must have been around 11 o'clock that morning.
That's so.
Yeah, leastwise, that's when Mrs. Henderson said she heard what sounded like a shot. You know the Hendersons, Britt, live right over in the road there, just down the road a bit from Seth Quincy's ranch, you know?
Yeah, sure, I know.
Clyde Henderson, he's that short, red-haired fellow who marries Hera Watkins.
I said I know him, Wendy.
Well, there's no need to take my head off. I'm just trying to give you the facts.
Oh, I'm sorry, you go ahead, give me the facts.
Well, let's see, where was I? Well, that's the trouble. Somebody interrupts you and you lose your whole train of thought. Oh, yeah, about Seth Quincy. Well, I guess that's all there is to tell. A trial was last Monday.
A trial?
Sure. Pete Kellgren, the fellow that killed him.
Pete Kellgren?
What's the matter with you, Britt? Ain't you listening to me?
What? Well, you know, you kind of neglected to mention Pete Kellgren before, Wendy, you know.
I did?
Yes.
Oh. Well, there wasn't any doubt but that he was guilty. When Marshal Burke arrested him, Kellgren still had the $400 in his pocket.
$400, huh?
The money he stole from Seth.
Oh, uh-huh. That's funny. Pete Kellgren never struck me as a type to... I guess you just never can tell about people, can you?
Oh, I didn't know you was a friend of Pete's, Britt.
Well, we weren't exactly friends, but we met up a couple of times. He always seemed like a nice young fellow to me.
Well, he even admitted robbing Seth. Of course, he says that when he come in, Seth was already dead, and the strongbox was just sitting right there, real inviting. He sure must think we're a bunch of ignoramuses expecting us to believe a yarn like that.
Well, I suppose it could be true.
The jury didn't see it that way. Hanging is scheduled for next Monday.
The hanging? Well, I reckon I owe you a quarter, huh?
Well, now, just a minute. I'll get you your change. Well, I'll be doggone. She's still there.
Hmm?
Well, that girl over in front of the depot. Been standing there since 9 a.m. this morning. Come in on the express from Fort Lyon.
Oh.
I guess she's waiting for somebody to meet her. Funny. I ain't heard of nobody expecting visitors. And I usually get wind of a thing like that.
Yeah, I imagine you do.
Yeah. Well, here's your change, Britt. Thanks a lot.
No mention. I'll be seeing you, Wendy.
You're going to be in town for a while, ain't you?
No, I'm heading back to Foster Ranch tomorrow.
Oh, that's a shame. You'll miss the hanging.
Mm-hmm. Well, I reckon I can do without it. So long. I couldn't help noticing the girl waiting on the station platform. She's young, not more than 20 or so. Pretty, too. The straw-colored hair that was sort of fixed up in braids across the top of her head. Real pretty. And it sure looked like she intended to stay around Smoke Falls for a spell. At least while she had plenty of luggage with her. Two great big canvas suitcases and a wicker basket packed to overflowing. I started to cross over toward her, and she gave a little turn. She was frowning, kind of anxious-like. She seemed to be studying me as if she was trying to make up her mind about something. Excuse me for bothering you, miss, but is there anything I can do for you?
You come to meet me, mister?
No.
Yeah, I see now. You could not be him.
How's that?
He's shorter feller. He sent me picture. He's different looking man.
Then you're waiting for somebody.
Oh, sure.
Well, maybe if you told me who it is, I'd be able to find him for you.
It is man I come to marry.
Oh, I see.
He write letter over 2 year now. He have family in same part of Sweden where I live. Be Swedish, mister.
Yes, I sort of figured you might be. Yeah.
Then he send me money. I come to America. I think he must be a rich feller, send me so much money. $200.
Yes, well, that's good some money, all right.
He tell me stay with my sister in Wisconsin till he make some more. I stay there 6 months over, but I get tired of waiting. I still have $50 left, so I take train west.
Uh-huh. Well, maybe he didn't know you were getting in today. Maybe that's why he's not here yet.
Well, I write him letter from Wisconsin. My sister helped me. I'm not so good at English language.
No, you're doing all right. Doing fine.
He must be busy working, and that is why he's late. But he will come. I do not worry.
Well, whatever you say. Go on.
Mister?
Yeah?
You're a friend of his?
Well, I don't know. You didn't tell me his name.
Oh, I am a very foolish person. I not use my brains. It is a Peter.
Peter?
Yeah, Peter Kellgren. You have heard of him?
Why, yes, I've heard of him.
You do not see him anywhere today?
No, I haven't seen him.
I think he is the same. Yeah, mister?
I didn't tell you my name either. It's Ponsett, Britt Ponsett.
I'm very pleased to meet you, Mr. Ponsett. I'm Anna Nordquist.
Oh, well, how do you do, Anna?
Why you look at me like that, mister?
Well,
something is the matter?
Yeah, I'm afraid there is.
Peter, he is not sick.
No, didn't that.
Well,
you said you'd come to America to marry Pete?
Yeah, sure.
But you don't know him very well, do you?
Over 2 years, we write letter.
Oh, yes, but I mean, with
you
letters...
You think I cannot love a man I never meet?
No, not necessarily.
I know Peter just the same as if we meet 100 times. We tell each other everything in letters.
Maybe so, but I...
I see what it is you think.
Oh?
You tell yourself I only marry Peter because he sent me so much money, because he is such a rich fellow.
No, of course not.
Well, I tell you the truth, mister. I marry him because I love him. I never see him, but I love him. There's no other reason.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, of course, Anna. Why don't you come over to the cafe and have a cup of coffee?
Oh, huh? It's very kind of you, but I must be here when Peter comes.
Well, I'm afraid Pete isn't coming.
I do not understand.
No, I'm awful sorry to tell you about this, but, he's in jail.
In jail?
Yeah.
You mean police arrest him?
Well, it was the marshal, and that's about the same thing.
What did Peter do?
Sure,
I know. He's scared to meet me, so he has too much to drink, yeah?
No, Anna, it's a lot more serious than that.
Tell me, mister.
Well, the folks say that he killed a man last week.
Peter killed a man?
Yeah, it sure looks that way.
No, it could not be. He's fine, good feller.
Yes, well, I guess you're bound to think that, Anna, but...
They make big mistake, I tell them so. They let my Peter go. Where is Jay?
No, I wouldn't do
Please,
that.
Please, mister, where is Jay?
Well, it's just around the corner there, but I don't think
Thank you very much.
Now, here, let me give you a hand with those
things. I can manage. I can carry a suitcase. Ever confirm, I'm plenty strong.
Now, listen, Anna, I'm afraid the marshal...
Goodbye, mister. You come to bedding, yeah?
Oh, sure. Well, good luck.
All right, very interesting episode of the Six Shooter. It's called Anna Nordquist, James Stewart starring, from 1954. We'll have more of this episode after these words. All right, well, in just a moment we have news. So when we come back from the news, Lisa, we will have an episode, the conclusion, I should say, of the Six Shooter. But what's up tonight when we come back.
All right.
Here,
so at 11 o'clock, we've got Inner Sanctum Mystery, which is always
everybody
a winner.
Loves,
I know they do.
Everybody loves Inner Sanctum.
And guess what we have at 12 o'clock? Another one that everybody loves is the Abbott and Costello Show.
Wow.
So we have two great shows coming up tonight. We hope you'll listen in starting at 11.
You know, when I was talking to this woman from New York, who is a Classic Radio Club member, and we were talking about how she was surprised of what she gets, she said, ooh, you know what show I really like? Can I put in a...
Abbott and Costello.
No, she said, could I put in a request for something? I said, what? She said, Lights Out.
Oh, well, you love
she
that,
she loves
too.
Lights Out. I said, yeah, there's some Lights Out coming up. Oh, yeah, there's all kinds of great stuff. And you know what, Lisa? I comb the library, right? There's 100,000 shows. I comb this library constantly, finding gems to put into the Classic Radio Club. But the number one priority, sound quality. It has to be tremendous sound quality. Well, doesn't matter how rare it is. I'm not putting a show in there that is not like brilliant sound quality.
Well, we feel that way as well when we air them here on WGN.
Very important.
And we have some great shows that we don't get to air because they don't sound good enough.
Yeah.
And we want it to sound just right here on WGN Radio.
They won't ever be in the Classic Radio Club if they don't sound amazing. All right, so check that out. ClassicRadioClub.com. Join for the first month. Only $1. Get 10 of the greatest classic radio shows of all time, including Abbott and Costello with the Who's On First. You don't want to miss that.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Are you Lisa Wolf?
Am I?
I don't know. Are you an imposter?
No, it's the real me. Luckily for you, it's the real me.
Yeah, you know, I know. I always can tell it's the real you because your you have a very distinct voice.
Yes.
Like
so
nobody
do you.
Nobody could ever
really
impersonate you.
I didn't think of that.
I would know that they're trying to impersonate you.
Really?
Yeah, and it's
That's
not the dimples. The dimples are very rare too that you have. They're very deep.
What's unusual?
Very deep.
I don't know.
Your voice is really
I can't really hear it the way you can.
You have a really interesting,
interesting.
And it's very nice. It's very nice. It cuts through. It's really, it's good. It's a good voice, Lisa. You should
thanks.
Be in radio.
That's a good
idea. Definitely have a voice for radio.
You know, the funny thing was, before I did radio, nobody ever said that. Now that I tell people I'm on the radio, they all say, oh, you have a great voice for radio. And I'm like, well, nobody ever said that before I started in radio.
I mean, you have a great voice for radio, and I have a great face for radio.
So it makes sense. It's perfect. We're a good combo.
It is. All right. We're listening to The Six Shooter. The show is called Anna Norquist. It stars James Stewart. Here's the conclusion.
Well, I didn't see where it was up to me to give Anna all the details about the hanging Monday and everything. She'd find out soon enough. Sure was a tough break, though, after coming all this distance and marrying a man she'd never seen. Well, I strolled around town for an hour or so, and then I headed over to George Billings' house where I'd left my things. I was planning to spend the night with George and his wife, Ella. They'd offered me the use of the spare room. Nobody home. Well, I picked up the flower pot on the top porch step, and I found the key under it, and there's a note from Ella, too. She said for me to go inside and make myself comfortable. There was a copy of the Smoke Falls Weekly Gazette on the hall table. I skimmed through it for a couple of minutes. The main article was about the Quincy shooting, Pete Kilgren's trial. Oh, who that is? Oh, hello.
They tell me I will find you here. He must talk to you. It's important.
Yes, well, come in, Anna.
Thank you very much.
Won't you sit down?
I would rather stand. I get too nervous if I sit. Mr. Ponce.
Yeah?
What is wrong with Marshall Burke?
Oh, nothing as far as I know.
He says Peter must be hanged.
Yeah, I know.
Well, it is not possible. They would not hang a man who is not guilty.
Well, Anna, maybe Pete is guilty.
No, he is not. The Marshal let me talk to Peter. I asked him if he does this awful thing.
He tells me no.
Well, Anna...
It is no lie. I can tell a man who lies. It is the truth, what Peter says.
Well...
He is fine feller. Better even than I hope. My sister warned me I should not expect too much. I will be disappointed. But Peter, he is good and kind and handsome.
Oh, he's a nice-looking boy, all right. No doubt about that.
And he did not kill any man. He could not be the one.
Well, he's admitted stealing Seth Quincy's money.
For me. That is why he takes it, so we can get married. It is very wrong to steal, and he must be punished for it.
Well, if he was willing to steal...
To steal is not to kill. And that is why they hang him, yeah?
That's right, yeah.
Then you must keep them from it.
Hmm?
Yeah. I tell Peter that we meet, that you are very nice to me. He says you be a famous person with a funny name, Six Shooter.
Oh, yes, yes.
He says you will prove he is not guilty. You will talk to Marshall for him.
Well, I don't see what talking to Marshall Burke would do.
Please, Mr. Ponsett. I tell you something now. Before I say I come to marry Peter because I'm in love with him because of letters, what he writes. Well, maybe I not speak the truth. Maybe I just want to come to America. I think I get no other chance. But now it is the truth. I meet him and I talk to him. And I am in love. I love him very much. You must believe me, Mr. Ponsett.
Oh, sure, Anna. Sure, I believe you.
Then you will talk to Marshall. Yeah.
Well, all right. All right, I'll talk to him. When I left Anna at the hotel, I went over to see Ned Burke. His office was in the front part of the jail where they were keeping Pete Kilgren. Ned had only been marshaled for a few months, but he'd had a couple of years deputy experience, so he knew the job. And he was sort of a man that usually made a good marshal, too. He's quiet, not looking for trouble, but able to take care of it when the time came.
I sure felt terrible, Brick, when she came in here and told me who she was and what she wanted.
Yeah.
I let her talk to Kilgren, figured it was the least I could do. This seemed to make things worse, though. He convinced her that he was innocent and I was out to get him.
Well, no, nobody's going to believe that, Ned.
That girl might believe it. Guess I wouldn't blame her if she did. That Kilgren's a pretty smooth talker.
Yeah. Ned.
Yeah, Brent?
There couldn't be any doubt about it, could there?
Hmm?
I mean, as I understand it, Pete says that Quincy was already dead when he got there.
Well, sure he did.
And that he took the money because, well, it was just so darn tempting.
It don't stand to reason that somebody'd murder Seth and then go off without breaking into a strong box. Now, does it, Britt?
No, I guess it doesn't.
Besides, Sarah Henderson seen Pete riding away from Seth's house not 5 minutes after she heard a shot.
Mm-hmm. What, you arrest him the same day?
No, I came into town right after I found Seth's body. Sarah had sent for me. She had a feeling something was wrong. Kilgren was at Bud Winkler's place. That's where I found him.
Mm-hmm. He still have the gun on him?
No, he claimed he didn't own a .45. That's what the slug in Seth's chest was, .45.
I see.
Of course, Pete had plenty of time to get rid of the gun, and there are plenty of places between Seth's ranch and town where he could have ditched it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true enough. Does anybody ever remember seeing Pete with a .45?
Mm-hmm. Not that I know of. Now, wait a minute, Britt. You ain't taking Pete's side in this thing, are you?
Well, I'm not taking anybody's side, Ned. I'm just curious, that's all.
This was a cold-blooded killing. You going out to Seth's place, you'll see. He was an old man, but he sure put up a darn good fight for his life. And from the looks of things, he went on fighting after he was shot.
Mm-hmm. You know, I just might take you up on that invitation, Ned.
Yeah.
Hmm? Yeah, about going out to Seth's place. See you later. It was getting on toward dusk when I reached Seth Quincy's ranch. Whoa. Whoa, boy. Whoa, Scar. Whoa. I walked up the front steps and tried the door. It wasn't locked. Seth had lived alone. It didn't look like anybody had in to straighten things up since the murder. Boy, there sure had been a whale of a fight in the parlor there. A couple of broken chairs and some stains on the sofa, and pieces of a lamp that had been smashed against the fireplace. Strongbox didn't seem to be there. I figured they'd probably needed that for the evidence. Well, I poked around for about half an hour, and then I headed back to town. The moon was starting to come up as we hit a bend in the trail, and the doggone thing happened. Now, Scar was usually as sure-footed as a mountain goat, and not a bit skittish either, but when a bat came winging out of some cottonwoods, I darn near sailed right out of the saddle. What the sand hill is going? Whoa! Whoa! Scar! Come on now. Come on. What? And that's when I saw it. It was buried under a pile of leaves in a little gully. The first thing that caught my eye was the moonlight glinting off a piece of metal. Easy, easy, Scar, easy. Of course, it could have been almost anything, a broken spur, or part of a farm tool, anything. But even before I pulled it out from underneath the leaves and the dirt, I knew it was a gun.
Yeah, who's there?
It's me, Britt Ponson.
Oh, just a minute. I think you never come, Mr. Ponsett. I get so worried.
Well, I'm sorry it took me so long.
Well, it does not matter now that you're here. You talk to Marshal Burke.
Yeah, I talk to him.
And you tell him Peter did not kill this man. You tell him Peter is not guilty.
No, Anna, I couldn't tell him that.
What are you saying?
Pete is guilty. I found his gun. The gun he used to kill Seth Quincy.
No.
It was hidden in a gully about a mile from the farmhouse.
I do not believe you.
I gave it to Marshal Burke. Now, you can see it for yourself if you want to go over there. Pete's initials right on the handle. Only one bullet had been fired. It's the right gun. There's no doubt about it.
No, it could not be.
Now, Anna, now listen to me. The only reason I'm telling you this is, well, after Monday, there won't be anything you can do about Pete. It'll be better if you just forget him.
I will not forget him. Ever.
Oh, it won't be easy. I know that. But as long as you know he's guilty, as long as there isn't any doubt in your mind, well, maybe it's for the best that you found out before...
Why you try to tell me lies?
Anna, this is the truth.
No, you say you will show me gun. You say it belongs to Peter. Well, what does Peter say?
Well, of course, he denies it.
Then I deny it, too.
All right, Anna. I guess there's nothing more I can do about it.
You lie to me, you and Marshall. You try to make me think that man I love is a criminal. I do not understand. In old country, they talk about America, they say is best country in the world. But this is lie, too. Where is justice? There is freedom. They hang a man for what he does not do.
Now, Anna,
his
listen.
His terrible, terrible country. I wish I never come here. I wish I never leave my home. I have no friend, no husband. I be alone in country that I hate.
Oh, I'm sorry. And if there's any way I can help you, if you need some money...
I want no help from American.
Well, good night, Anna. The light was still on in the marshal's office, so I stopped off and I asked Ned if I could go and have a little talk with Pete. He didn't seem to think it'd do much good, and to tell you the truth, I didn't think so either, but... Well, I couldn't see it'd do any harm to try, so... Pete was a tall, stringy man, about 25 or so, tow-headed with a yellow mustache, kind of a pointed chin.
All right, Britt, I'll leave you here. If you want out, just give me a yell.
Thanks, Ned.
Sure and popular today, ain't I, Britt?
Yeah, I guess you might call it that, Pete.
Well?
Well, I thought maybe by now you'd feel like coming out with the truth.
Told you the truth before. Never seen that gun in my whole life. I ain't the only man with those initials, am I? Zed, what's the difference if I'm going to be hung anyway?
Well, the difference is Anna.
Anna?
She believes you, Pete. She believes you're innocent. And as long as you go on saying so, she's going to keep on believing it. Even after...
It's kind of nice to have somebody believe in you, Britt. Nobody else does.
Now, Pete, you weren't railroaded. You had a fair judge and a fair trial, but Anna doesn't realize that. She's young, she's upset, and she's in a strange country. She wanted to come here pretty bad. Had a lot of dreams about this country, and now those dreams are turning sour.
Maybe it's a good thing she woke up.
Well, I just don't happen to agree with you on that. I think this is a pretty good place to live. But Anna won't find that out, not if she goes on feeling this way.
Well, what do you expect me to do? Confess to murdering Seth Quincy just so as Anna can appreciate the good old USA? If you ask me, this country ain't so hot anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are a lot of folks who'd put up pretty good argument about that. Your own father is one of them.
You're just wasting your breath.
Yeah, I guess I am. Any man who'd kill Seth Quincy in cold blood the way
it
you did...
It wasn't cold blood. I didn't even...
Go on, Pete.
All right, but I ain't telling you this because of... I don't even know why I'm telling you. I needed money for Anna so we could get married. I wanted to make a good showing like I told in the letters I wrote her. Everybody said Seth had plenty of cash, that he wouldn't put none of it in the bank because he'd had a fight with Mr. Putnam and he kept it all in that strong box. I thought he'd gone to town. I never figured he'd come back and catch me while I was robbing him. I tried to hold him off with my gun, but he just kept coming. I had to fire. Even then, he didn't stop. Not until... Well...
Pete.
What do you want now?
I want you to tell this to Anna.
You can tell her.
I'm afraid that wouldn't do any good.
She's real pretty, ain't she? I never figured on her being so pretty. Sure was surprised.
Yeah?
I've been writing her for the last 2 years. It's Pa's idea. He knew her kin back in Sweden. Wasn't any girl around here that... Well, leastways, none I was interested in.
Uh-huh. Well, Pete?
I'll tell her. But it wasn't cold blood, Britt. Not the way you think.
Yeah. Ned, I'm all done here. Well, Pete finally explained things to Anna, and I guess she saw what had happened in kind of a different light, maybe. Anyway, she stayed on in Smoke Falls, and last time I was through there, she was working over in Windy Nights Cafe. She changed some, too, the way she wore her hair, the way she dressed. But she was still just pretty as a picture, huh, Georgie? And you know something? Wendy had changed. He wasn't talking so much. A folk said that was Ann's doing. That she'd asked him to simmer down a bit. Well, sir, if she was able to get Wendy to stop talking even for a couple of minutes, if she had that much influence on him, well, you never know, do you?
The Six Shooter is a transcribed NBC Radio Network production in association with Review Productions. It is written by Frank Burt and is based on a character created by him. Mr. Stewart may currently be seen in the Universal International picture, The Glenn Miller Story. Others in the cast were Lillian Byath, Bill Johnstone, Lou Merrill, and Harry Killer Bartell. Special music for this program was by Basil Adlam, and the entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. All characters and incidents were fictitious, and any resemblance to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. This is Hal Gibney speaking. Hearing Time brings you the Senate Committee hearings tonight on the NBC Radio Network.
Did you hear the guy at the end of that, the announcer? Did you see hear how slow he was talking? It's kind of how Roger does the news sometimes, you know?
Kind of slow motion.
Yeah, no, he just puts a pause in between every word.
Well, because
like
he knows that,
that
you like when the news takes a long time. The longer, the better.
No, Roger doesn't do that. Roger does a great job. I'm kidding around. I don't think he could even hear us. I think he's something.
You're a good kidder.
He didn't even get to hear about Schauburg or anything.
Good. That's better that way. That way you guys can't argue anymore tonight.
The Six Shooter, broadcast from May 6, 1954. Anna Norquist with James Stewart. I'm trying to see if everyone could maybe not like me at this radio station.
I was going to say, Roger may have been the last person who hadn't argued with you. No, Curtis argues with you.
Curtis? Well, because I called Curtis Chris one time.
Oh, there's much more than
that.
But
it wasn't really.
That's the beginning of
it. It was in between. It was like Chris.
I think you've argued with everybody here, Carl.
I think pretty much nobody at this station likes me.
I think that you just...
why, I wonder.
I'm going to leave it right there.
I'm kind of nice to everybody.
I should know when to be
nice
quiet.
To everybody
this is
here.
The time.
I'm kind of nice to everybody here.
Went to their face, sure.
You cracked me up, Lisa. Lisa's so funny. You cracked me up, man, I tell
you. Well, you know, truth
you
is truth.
You are so funny. That's so not true.
You're bringing me down, Carl.
Listen, Curtis. Remember he looped it?
Oh, I do.
He said I
because
didn't...
you were wrong and I
no,
was right.
No, I called him Curtis.
No, you did
yes,
not,
I did.
Curtis. Come on.
Yeah, I did.
No, he's not. I'm just going to tell everybody his head is nodding no.
Yeah. He's wearing a Cubs shirt. They were not very good today, though, I'll tell you.
I thought, no.
Yesterday or 2 days
they
ago they
out.
Won, but then yesterday they lost.
Oh,
they got six to nothing.
But
come
on. But it's a nice shirt. So.
I'm still a big Cub fan. All right, that was a Six Shooter. That was a good show. James Stewart as Britt Ponson on that.